Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
What if there was a way to level up your energy, get rid of stress, and take more control of your body? Welcome to Quantum Upgrade. This is a new technology that taps into quantum energy to help you feel amazing. Quantum Upgrade has a lot of different products that help protect you from EMF and help activate your body's natural healing abilities. You can expect better sleep, more resilience, less stress, and better blood flow. The cool thing about Quantum Upgrade is that the products are backed by a lot of heavy-duty scientific studies, and there's a new measurable upgrade. You can now use Quantum Upgrade to increase your consciousness levels between 1400 and 2200 on the Hawkins map of consciousness. If you don't know what that means, do some research because it's impressive, it's fun to learn about, and it's something that I've come to understand. Ready to try Quantum Upgrade? Visit quantumupgrade.io/Dave for a 7-day free trial. What if there was a way to feel younger for longer? Well, there is. Your body needs something called the NAD plus molecule to help you age well. When you're young, your body makes a lot of NAD plus, and that helps you make energy, it helps you keep your DNA healthy, absorb nutrients well, and it protects your cells from stress. But once you hit about 30, your NAD plus levels start to drop. The good news is that longevity scientists have found some things that can help, like niacin, niacinamide, and Niagen. They help your body make more NAD plus even as you age. All three of these are in an amazing formula called Qualia NAD plus. Check out Qualia NAD Plus risk-free for up to 100 days at neurohacker.com/Dave15 to save an extra 15%. That's neurohacker.com/Dave15, Qualia NAD Plus. It's what I use.
Today's cool fact of the day is that you can get something beyond weight loss from fasting, although weight loss could be pretty cool if that's what you're trying to do. A study from the University of Southern California showed that fasting can trigger stem cell regeneration. And if you're at the Bulletproof Conference, you know where I had my stem cells injected, pretty much everywhere you can think of. But you could actually make them regenerate themselves just by fasting. The research found that rounds of prolonged fasting guard against immune system damage and make your immune system regenerate itself. And they figured out that fasting moves stem cells from a dormant state to a state of self-renewal, which is kind of cool.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Today's guests are guys I've wanted to talk to you for a while. One is a guy who's been on Bulletproof Radio before and a friend and one of the experts in the fasting and keto communities. And the other is a guy I haven't spent as much time with. One is Jimmy Moore of Live La Vida Low Carb. Jimmy, great to talk with you again, man.
Hey, what's up, man?
And also Dr. Jason Fung. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hi, great to be here.
So Jason's a nephrologist and a leading global expert on intermittent fasting, knows a lot about low-carb and high-fat diets, especially for diabetes. And if you haven't heard of Jimmy Moore, it's probably because you're not on the internet. He's got like 1,000 or maybe 10,000, just kidding, about like 1,000 episodes of Live La Vida Low
1,200 carb. Technically, but yeah, sure.
1,200. You know what I'm saying? Like 4 times more than Bulletproof Radio. And has talked to most of the experts I can name and some I can't name on his show. The other thing is, if you're watching on our YouTube channel, by the way, bulletproofexec.com/YouTube will take you right to the YouTube channel where you can subscribe. You will see that Jimmy is looking better than he's ever looked. I've been on Jimmy's low-carb cruise, and I mean, you just finished a 20-day fast, but you are looking healthier, more vibrant, and more amazing than I've seen you look ever since I've known you. So congratulations, man.
Thank you. And I never would have believed it would come from the F word.
From the F word. Well, I mean, there's so many of them that can help you lose weight, Jimmy.
Well,
French?
What'd you say?
French press. Right?
But yeah, I mean, fasting has revolutionized really my thinking on everything about diet. I mean, much in the same way that low carb 12 years ago kind of revolutionized what I thought about diet, fasting has just added that same level of excitement for me, because I never realized just how bad I felt, even in the place where I thought I was feeling good, compared to when I started fasting. And I'm going, whoa, all those things that I was so fearful about regarding fasting was silly. And the more that I've done this, and I've talked about this when I've done updates on Periscope, I feel like I've kind of grown a little bit of a fasting muscle, so to speak, that the more I've done it, the stronger I feel like I've gotten. Where fasting, I used to think a 3-day fast was a long fast. Now a 7-day fast seems so short.
The first time I did like a real fast, I went to a cave in the desert outside Sedona.
Of course you did.
And I slept on a rock, and I only had water. Actually, I had a sleeping bag on a rock.
And it was pitch black, yeah.
It was at night, and there were strange noises that scared the crap out of me, actually, because, well, you never know what animals are coming into your cave. But that definitely pushed some of my fear buttons, and it's normal. You say it's silly, Jimmy, when people have a fear of fasting, but there's only three things we're wired to do as a species to make sure that we reproduce, and they're all F words, right?
Yeah.
One of them is feed. So like eat everything or you'll die. Like that's our wiring, right? And it's like flee, like run away from scary stuff, which is why I wanted to be in a cave, right? Just to see if I could like double down on that. And the other F word is to make sure you reproduce the species, right? Like that's it. So you're pushing survival buttons, and that's why there's so much polarized debate online. People just get all wigged out about nutrition and all because we're messing with our survival programming there. So I love what you're saying there. That you pushed, you like developed the muscle, and now it seems silly, but at the time, man, this was your body telling you you will die, and you have to face that fear of death to just put the fork down, right?
And I think it all starts with that first step. I think once people try it just once and fail, that's what I want people to know. You're going to fail probably the first time you ever tried to fast because you've psyched yourself into it. I did. I totally psyched myself into it. I'm going to fail. And that first attempt at even intermittent fasting crashed and burned with a blaze of glory. But it was that first attempt that got me to try it again. And I got a little better and went a little longer. And I tried it again and got a little better. And now, again, it's almost become second nature along with my ketogenic diet to make me healthy. And I'm very grateful for the work of Dr. Fung because he's certainly leading the way in this aspect.
So you guys just wrote a new book, which people are calling the Bible of Fasting, which is a great book. It's called The Complete Guide to Intermittent Fasting. And you are an Amazon bestseller. Now, I'm assuming you're like a real Amazon bestseller, not in like religious studies category 2.
Oh, we're more than an Amazon bestseller. It actually hit international bestseller or for my Canadian co-author, national bestseller, because it did hit number 5 in the self-improvement category in Canada, and it hit number 1 on Amazon Canada. It was stayed at number 1 for about 5 days. So we were very on.
I'm still
that was an album.
They have Amazon in Canada?
In all books, yeah, Amazon.ca.
By the way, Jason, I live in Canada.
You're so funny. So. Yes, I know you do. So a national bestseller for you guys.
That is so cool. Congratulations, guys. Because this is one of those things that I'm going to be a little bit honest. There's been a lot of extremism around fasting, just historically, like for the reasons we just talked about, where it's fear of starving and all these incredible, you'll die, you'll go into starvation mode, but it's not the one you want, and you'll lose all your muscle and all these sorts of things. So Jason, how does it actually work?
Well, the thing about it is, as you said, there's a lot of fear around, and that's one of the reasons we wrote this book, is to kind of put to bed some of these myths that really hold people back. Because the thing is that those myths, the main two being starvation mode and losing all your muscles, they're actually not true at all. And if you even think about the word breakfast, it's the meal that breaks your fast, which means you should be fasting every day, right? So this is not some cruel and unusual punishment, right? this is part of kind of everyday living. And then you can look back at history and you can see that three of the most influential people in the history of the world, Jesus Christ, the Prophet Muhammad, and Buddha, all agreed on really probably only one thing, right? And that was really the power of fasting, right? So people have done it for years and years and years, probably initially inadvertently, right? Because it's winter, there's no food. But when that passed, then people did it deliberately, right? So you look back at the ancient Greeks and Plato and Hippocrates, and all these people fasted, not because they had to lose weight or they had diabetes or there was no food. They did it because of all the benefits of fasting. And that's what we've really lost sight of, is that there's something uniquely and intrinsically good about fasting. And it used to be called a cleanse, a detox, and so on. It's really getting rid of all that kind of excess junk from your body, the excess glucose, the excess fat, the excess protein. Because you have to understand that the process of renewal is not simply a building process, right? You have to tear everything down and then rebuild. Like, think about your kitchen cabinets. If you have really 70s-style kitchen cabinets, you can't just build another cabinet on top of it. You got to tear it down and then rebuild. And that's what fasting really does. So what you do is you activate certain hormonal mechanisms. And they're actually extremely interesting, because what they are is noradrenaline and human growth hormone, predominantly, some cortisol as well. And these are the so-called counter-regulatory hormones, in that they increase blood glucose, right? So insulin tends to lower the blood glucose. These ones tend to raise it. So the reason your body does that is because you're not eating. So therefore, it wants your body to start pumping out the glucose. So then think about it. If your noradrenaline is going up, you have more energy, right? So you're not feeling tired during a fast. You're feeling energized during a fast. And then you've got growth hormone, so that you get this kind of rebuilding. So this is what's really fascinating about the whole thing, is that you've got the entire kind of renovation process. You activate something called autophagy, which is very, very hot right now, because autophagy, one of the research pioneers of autophagy, just recently won the 2016 Nobel Prize for Medicine. And what he described was this process where your body actually cleans out all that excess proteins, old junky old proteins and subcellular parts. And so you clean that all out. And then the human growth hormone means when you start to eat again, you can rebuild new ones. So you're getting rid of the old stuff, building new stuff. So it's actually almost a reversal of the aging process, right? And people have always known this, right? The Prophet Muhammad, Jesus Christ, they're not trying to kill off their parishioners, right? They're telling them to do these fasts, and long ones too sometimes, right? A month of Ramadan, 40 days of Lent, sometimes very long ones, because they knew that there was something uniquely beneficial about the fasting that's really not available anywhere else. And then you can talk about other benefits, like the anti-cancer benefits and prevention of Alzheimer's disease, and then even the sort of obvious ones like weight loss and type 2 diabetes. And people talk about using it for elite athletes. Training in the fasted state is kind of the big thing coming up. And again, you can understand why people would want to do it. If your noradrenaline is high, you're going to have more energy, so you can train harder. And when you refeed, then what happens is your growth hormone is high, so you build up that muscle faster. So you train harder, recover faster. That's a huge advantage if you're an elite athlete and competing, right? So all these elite level athletes, you see it in kind of professional sports and all this, they're talking about low carb diets, they're talking about training in the fasted state. So there was really no reason for us to be afraid of fasting. But unfortunately, what has happened is that people have, especially companies that sell food, for example, they just don't want you to fast, right? That's all lost profit. So for the last 50 years, there's been this whole thing of you should eat more times a day. You should eat all the time to lose weight. I'm like, okay, that's really dumb, right? That doesn't even sound like it's going to work.
You missed half the strategy. You should eat all the time to lose weight, and you should eat things that make you fat, like artificial sweeteners, because then you double down on the profit cycle. I mean, come on, Jason.
And whole grains.
That's right. And, yeah. That's right. And a lot of processed foods and snack foods. That's right. So that's exactly right. And it's not something that was foreign to us. That's what everybody thinks, right? And I get this reaction all the time. When I tell people to fast, man, the first thing they're like, oh, you're just crazy, right? And it's like, but think about it. Why can't you do it, right? There's actually no reason. And I'll just touch on the two main concerns that people have, which is the starvation mode and muscle loss. So the starvation mode is this idea that your body is going to slow down its metabolism when you don't eat. And so if you normally burn 2,000 calories a day, the idea is that as you go into starvation mode, you'll go down to 1,500 calories a day. Because you're burning less, it's easier to plateau your weight loss and regain. And what's truly ironic about this whole myth about starvation mode is cutting a few calories a day guarantees that you will go into this starvation mode. So we have studies going back almost 100 years, which tell us that if you simply reduce your calories, say, by a quarter, go down from 2,000 calories a day to 1,500, your metabolism will slow to 1,500, right? And it's because the body's not stupid, right? If it's taking in 2,000, burning 2,000 is great. You drop down to 1,500, you can't keep burning 2,000 because then you're going to die, right? The body's just not that stupid, right? So it really cuts down to 1,500. And that's why caloric reduction diets are guaranteed to fail, guaranteed, right? Because you go into this starvation mode. But what doesn't put you into starvation mode is actual starvation, or at least the controlled version, which is fasting. Because what you're doing is that you're not actually slowing down your metabolic rate. You're forcing the body to switch fuel sources so that you're not burning food, you're burning stored food, which is body fat, right? And then your body's like, hey, look, there's plenty of this stuff. Let's just burn 2,000 calories because that's really what I want to do. So if you look at studies of the metabolic rate, so even over 70 days of alternate daily fasting or four straight days, if you measure the metabolic rate after four straight days of fasting, it's actually 10% higher than when you started. The VO2, which is your exercise capacity, is 10% higher. And that makes sense because your body is actually pumping you full of energy. So this makes sense because if you are a caveman and it's winter and there's no food, you can't shut down your metabolism because then every day is going to get harder to go out and hunt that rabbit, right? So your body, again, is just not that stupid, right? What it does is it switches fuel sources and then pumps up your energy so you can go out and hunt that woolly mammoth, right? So that's how we survived, right? So there's a huge number of benefits to the hormonal fasting. And it's the same thing with the muscle loss. If we all lost muscle when we fasted, again, those cavemen would have died out a long time ago. So think about this. All those Aboriginal people, indigenous people who went through these feast and famine cycles, right? Every time you gain weight, you gain fat. Every time you lose weight, you lose muscle, right? It's like, okay, so you're telling me that nature designed us to store energy. Food energy is fat. And yet when we need energy, we burn muscle, right? You think you think Mother Nature is so stupid, right? Mm-hmm. That's like storing firewood for the winter. But as soon as you need it, oh, let's chop up our sofa, throw it in the fire, right? Nobody's that dumb, right? And this is the thing. Neither is our body. So all those indigenous people who had those feast and famine cycles, they should be 100% little balls of 100% fat, right? Like, it's funny how that didn't happen, right? All those Native Americans, all those Inuit, all those Bush people, they're all lean and muscular with no fat. Why? Your body stores energy as fat, and when you need it, you burn energy as fat, right? And all the metabolic studies show the same thing. And people say, well, because of gluconeogenesis, you're going to burn protein. Well, if your question is, do you lose protein, then measure the protein. And again, just recently, there was a study comparing directly caloric reduction versus alternate daily fasting. At the end of it, if you look at lean mass percentage, had gone up a little bit in both cases because they're losing fat. But the percentage went up 0.5 in the caloric reduction and 2.2 in the intermittent fasting, which means that it's four times better at preserving your lean mass than caloric reduction. It's way better. And again, the same thing. If you look at metabolic rate, with the caloric reduction, it went down. With the fasting, it did not. Right. So if you are trying to keep your weight off, you must fast, right? You can't just cut calories. You will fail. And that's why everybody fails, because they've kind of given up this therapeutic modality. because the two things is the hunger and the metabolic rate. That's what kills the weight loss in the long term, right? So there's a huge advantage for fasting from a metabolic rate standpoint.
There's a study that I've used in a couple talks that I give that looks at what happens when you raise ketones a little bit. It's only to 0.38, which is like halfway to nutritional ketosis. But that suppresses ghrelin, which is the main hunger hormone, and then that causes you to reset your hunger levels to your current body weight. So if you fast even just a little bit, you can get that benefit. And I remember when I weighed 300 pounds, and Jimmy, you were like at 480. So like you've lost
410,
more
yep.
than, or 410, sorry. You've lost 180, you're at 410. And like the difference in your function when you get control of just that one little hunger hormone, that one little craving hormone, it changes a lot. But fasting does something more than just ketones there, right? What else is going on with hunger hormones when you go through that, whatever, about 2 days of I'm hungry and all of a sudden you're not hungry anymore? It's not just noradrenaline and it's not just ghrelin. Are there other hormones involved that are changing that affect hunger?
You can actually measure the ghrelin, and people have done this over an extended fast. And the ghrelin peaks on day two, and every day after that, it goes down. And we see this all the time. And this is the advantage we have, is that we prepare people. If they're going to go on a long fast, we say, well, be prepared that day two is going to suck, right? And it's always true. Day two, sometimes day three, that's the stage where you go, I cannot take this. There's no way I can do this, right? But then every day after that, ghrelin actually marches down every single day. By day five, day six, day seven, it's so low that you're not hungry at all. And the question is why? The reason is that you are burning fat, right? So your body is energized and it's essentially eating your own fat, right? So there's no reason why it needs to eat something else. So ghrelin goes down, and by day five, day six, and you see this all the time, people are like, yeah, I can just go on forever. I feel great. My mind is, on fire, and everything is feeling good. So ghrelin, and people say this all the time. They go, again, we have seen hundreds of people, so we have the advantage of that clinical experience. And they come in and they say, you know, fasting, I thought when I did the fasting that it would make me really, really hungry. But the exact opposite has happened, and I don't feel hungry at all. It's like my stomach has shrunk. And I'm always like, well, it didn't actually physically shrink, but it's like that. And people are like, you know, this is terrific, because again, when you go on a caloric restriction diet, what kills your diet long-term is the hunger and the metabolic slowdown. So now you've got a technique that can actually help on both sides. So it is the ghrelin, but it's also this whole other, all this other stuff. Like there's just so much going on. And sometimes people talk about exogenous ketones. And that's great, but that, remember, only gives you a little bit of the benefit of fasting, whereas the fasting gives you the kind of whole range. And obviously, you can't fast forever, but, you know, yeah, there are benefits to kind of using it.
It's interesting that the day two problems where your ghrelin levels are highest and you're hungry and it's going to suck, it's not that way if you use brain octane as an exogenous source of ketones. You can literally have bulletproof coffee for the first 2 days, which, at least in me, when I prick my finger, I get up to 0.5, 0.6, enough to suppress ghrelin, and then you can eat nothing, and you don't experience any decline in energy or any sucky day two on an extended fast whatsoever, right? And I'm lazy, and plus I have work to do. Bulletproof is a lot of work. I'm a dad. I don't want to be a zombie for 2 days. I have a life to live. Do you guys ever do that when you're looking to reduce suffering on day two of fasting, which is the worst part? I mean, I certainly do, but...
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing that people ask us all the time about bulletproof coffee. Is it okay during fasting? And what people don't understand, they think it's all about calories, right? And in my first book, The Obesity Code, we talked all about it. It's not really about calories. It's about insulin. Insulin is what really makes us fat. And what's fascinating is that if you eat pure fat, you will get a lot of calories, but almost virtually zero insulin effect. So if you're looking at the fast where a lot of the benefits come from lowering insulin, you could take 500-600 calories of bulletproof coffee and get almost all the benefits of the fasting. So you're like, hey, if you want to do that, yeah, it's like it's like a really effective hack, right? If you want to do that and it helps you, we're all like, hey, if it helps you, do it, right? Because you will still get almost all the benefits because you're lowering insulin, which is really the point, not lowering calories, because everybody's all about calories. But the calories paradigm has been completely shot, right? There's no serious people in weight loss who talk about calories.
Now, when you say almost all the benefits, and this is something that I think listeners really care about, and I do not have absolute clarity on which benefits you don't get when you're consuming just the fats. There's third-party studies that looked at insulin effect. Bulletproof coffee was the lowest insulin effect. They found no effect at all of any breakfast they could find anywhere, like a test of 50 breakfasts and all this different stuff. But you've studied fasting at a much deeper level. You're a nephrologist. So what are the things you don't get if you use Bulletproof coffee during a fast? Like why should you go for a full fast? I would say for the first few days, drink Bulletproof coffee because life is better that way. That's just my personal preference. But after that, whether you want to have nothing, what are you missing out on if you have, you know, your Bulletproof coffee in the morning during a long fast and you're having nothing else?
If you have zero insulin effect, you probably get almost all the benefits, right? And it's variable, right? The point is, so there's another variation we use quite commonly, which is a bone broth fast, which is you fast, but you use bone broth. That's different because it has a lot of protein in it.
That's the amino acids, right?
Yes, exactly. And some people actually think that's good because you get all these kind of things that are good for you from the bones, right? But the thing is that that protein can actually turn off autophagy.
It does, because
it's very sensitive to autophagy. So one of the things you have to be very careful of, if that's your goal, then maybe that bone broth fast is not good for you. And the other thing is that we often allow people to use a bit of cream in their coffee during fasting, for example. But again, you have to be careful because there's protein there. So for that, if you're going to drink a lot of coffee and use cream, then yeah, you can turn off a lot of those benefits because of the insulin effect. Bulletproof coffee, by contrast, doesn't have really that problem. But it's that little bit of protein that comes along with the other stuff. If you're using MCT oil or coconut oil or one of these relatively pure things, but if you're using some dairy products and you're getting some of the dairy proteins in there, then yeah, it's the protein that's the issue. But if it's zero insulin effect, then you should get all the benefits.
And that's really helpful to hear. I've been sort of digging around saying that maybe there's something happening in the liver. I know that with the brain octane, which is like a subset of the MCTs, we've got a study that it raises ketones higher than MCT or higher than just coconut oil, which doesn't appear to raise ketones more than just plain fasting. It's still, it's a good source of fat, but long chain fat metabolism has to do something to the liver. So maybe you get less autophagy in the liver because you're consuming fat. I don't know, but there's very little science about that detail. I do know that if you're eating protein, like you said, it's going to probably reduce the amount of autophagy that you have. And there's probably some specific amino acids, like we know L-glutamine takes you out of ketosis reliably. But do you have, like, is glycine an amino acid you should have? Like, have you looked at taking specific amino acids during a fast so that you either have more energy or get more benefits? It seems like there's probably something to be done in there.
I haven't looked into that myself. Okay. I mean, it's probably a level of detail that's not that available. You'd be surprised because, well, you probably wouldn't be surprised, but there's really almost no research on fasting. But like, you start looking at studies, right? So when I started looking, I started digging up the papers, and they're all from like the 60s. I'm like, holy crap, there is like nothing. Right. And I think it's this whole stigmatization that got put on us by the kind of commercial interests that really took us out of looking into it as a serious option. I mean, to be fair, in the 60s and 70s, we were talking more about world hunger, right? Malthusian, you know, economics and so on. And nobody was looking at the opposite problem, right? But now it makes a lot more sense for us to be looking at this sort of thing as a solution. And there's so many benefits really to what you're proposing because it makes your life so simple, right? It you get all kinds of time to do other stuff. It's, you know, you don't, if you, I mean, not the Bulletproof coffee, but if you just do water fast, for example, it's completely free, right? You can do it anywhere in the world. You don't have to bring anything special with you, right? So there's so many advantages to fasting. You can add it to any diet that you want to, right? If you want to eat pizza and burgers, you can use pizza and burgers and fasting, right? Of course, that's not great for you. But
you got to make a smoothie out of them, and then it's okay. Just a piece of kale, add a pizza.
Hey, Dave, can I relay a story here? Because when I was dibble-dabbling into fasting, I was doing a fat fast as part of some of what I learned in my Atkins diet experience. And I found that I actually get more hungry on a 1,200-calorie fat fast, which for people that don't know what that is, it's about 90% of your calories coming from fat and then the remaining 10% protein and very little carbohydrate. 1,200 calories, I am so hungry, starving, miserable all the time, and yet I eat no food at all, basically water, and if I need it, bone broth with some sea salt, and I feel so much more sated with the latter compared to the former, even though the former is giving me considerable amount of calories. So I think for some of us that are insulin resistant, perhaps even that fat calories is doing something that would be stoking the hunger.
But it may not be the actual fat calories, Jimmy, because I'm aware of fat fasting. I lost 50 of my 100 pounds on the Atkins diet years ago, and I couldn't lose the other 50. And I've seen this a lot with people on a kind of a standard high-fat, low-carb template, and it's because you're eating damaged fats, like fats that are oxidized and sure. fats that have been fried. And Atkins was an absolute genius, but pork rinds, like the fat in pork rinds is highly oxidized, which triggers your body to try and get rid of the oxidized fats, which requires glucose to help you process them in the liver, right? And Jason, correct me if I'm wrong on any of this stuff. This is my understanding. I'm not a physician, but and then there's also the oftentimes the artificial sweeteners that are included that do trigger intense cravings, like Nutrisweet.
Well, I ate neither of those during my fat fast.
Good deal. So you were not doing that. That was
artificial sweeteners is a good question because a lot of people say, well, there's no calories, so can I use Splenda or whatever? And we're always like, no. And they're always like, oh, why not? And we're always like, that stuff is just not good for you, right?
I'm a nephrologist. Filters.
Yeah, so it's true because there's all these artificial chemicals and stuff, and we're all like, no, you got to get rid of all of that stuff. Can we use canned bone broth? And we're like, no, that stuff is full of chemicals, right? And you're trying to get rid of it. You're trying to get rid of it and clean your body out, right?
There's a protocol that I didn't put in my book, but I put it on the website called the Rapid Fat Loss Protocol, and it's titled How to Lose Weight Faster Than You Really Should. And it's basically a modified Atkins fat fast where you don't eat anything inflammatory at all, even the 10% you're allowed to have, and you focus on specific kinds of fats. And when you feel like you just can't stand it anymore, once or twice a week you have some sweet potatoes and steak and eggs. But for the most part, you're basically pounding things that raise ketones. And I've seen people lose a pound a day for 75 days on a protocol like that. It's ridiculous. But the reason it's a problem, and this is why I'm telling you all this is as a precursor to a question, is that when people lose a lot of weight, they oftentimes are storing mercury and pesticides and other crap in their fat cells, and they get really bad brain fog. Do you guys experience that? Have you ever come across it in your populations? And you can buy in the toxins as you go, and I had to add that in there, and things like activated charcoal, just because this happened to me, and it happened to a bunch of people who are just like you lose 50 pounds of fat in 2 months, whatever was in that fat had to go through the liver. And if the liver couldn't get liver and kidneys, if they couldn't get it out fast enough, it's probably going to end up in the brain. Any issues with that when someone goes on a full on fast the way you recommend?
We've never seen that problem actually. Okay. And again, with the ketones, most people feel very much clearer, like more energized mentally, much, much sharper, than used to be. And so from experience, it's not a common problem. I mean, everybody does react differently. So there is a lot of problems that do come up, and we try and help people with anticipating these problems, how to get through these problems. But there are always problems. The other thing is that's important for us is to set their expectations to the proper one. And one of the big ones is the initial rapid weight loss. It's not a bad thing, but most people lose far more than a half a pound a day. So the average weight loss fat loss is half a pound a day. Because if you burn, if 1 pound of fat is roughly 3,500 calories and you eat about 1,800, right, it takes one, 1 pound of fat lasts for 2 days. So therefore, it's a roughly half a pound of fat loss per day. Now, over a 7 day fast, for example, most people will lose like 8 to 10 pounds, right? And then they're like, oh, great. But then as soon as they start eating, they'll gain like five of that back. And it says, oh, it's just a waste of time. It's like, no, you're still down five, right? It wasn't a waste. You had to expect that to come back. And then if they know that ahead of time, then they're not like completely crushed when, you know, they thought all 10 would stay off. That 10 is not all going to stay off. So once they know that, they can kind of move forward and understand that it wasn't a failure at all. This was expected. Like sometimes more stays off and sometimes less. But yes, you have to expect that.
Now, Jimmy, you've talked a lot about healing insulin resistance. And this is something that I've experienced. When I was in my mid-20s and I started doing a bunch of metabolic testing, so this is going back for me, 18 years ago. Later next week or something, I turned 44. So I had a fasting blood sugar of around 117. They said I was pre-diabetic and at high risk for stroke and heart attack in my panels. I'm like, this isn't good. Actually, I was 29 during that test. So I just got my results back. I did this thing with Human Longevity Inc. where they do this full human genome sequencing, like all this crazy stuff. And they do a big panel of tests. And they looked at my insulin sensitivity, and I'm forgetting the metric right now, but it's on a scale of 1 to 120. You're basically a bad type 2 diabetic if you're at 120. My insulin sensitivity was 1. Like, I'm as insulin sensitive as you can get, which is awesome, which means I probably should be glucose intolerant. But I also had high glucose tolerance. And they're like, this is weird. We don't even normally see that in someone. So my question for you guys is, number one, Jimmy, I want to see, where are you and are you measuring insulin resistance? And is it improving over time with the practice you're doing? And number two, from Jason, is what about glucose tolerance and insulin sensitivity changes with fasting?
So insulin resistance is a little bit tricky to determine where you are on that scale. The only thing I can go by is fasting blood glucose levels being at a certain level, fasting insulin levels being in double digits rather than below 5, which is what I would like to see it at. But signs that it's improving, and definitely in the midst of this recent fast that I just completed of 21 days, which, by the way, I lost 27 pounds in the 21 days, which means I should have only lost, what, Jason, 10 and a half pounds during that time. So if I go back to only having lost 16 net, I ain't complaining.
How much more do you have to lose? No, how much more do you have to lose?
Oh, how much more? I thought you said, what do you have to lose?
Exactly.
How much more? I could probably stand to lose 60, 70 more pounds.
Really? Okay, because I can only see you from
like it's abdominal. It's all in the abdomen. Up. Yeah, it's all in the abdomen.
You are looking like, I almost wouldn't recognize you in an airport right now. Like, you are, it's your the face beard. Looks, it's not just the beard. Your face looks way leaner than I've ever seen. Like, well, you look really good.
Thank you. What's interesting is my legs are very muscular. My arms are very skinny. My face and kind of upper body is all skinny. It's all in the middle, which Jason will tell you, I'm a prime candidate for fasting, which is why I'm doing these fasting experiments, trying to remove all of that dangerous fat from around the organs. So I actually have done some DEXA scans before and after. Yeah, I knew it. What? I know you well. Around my January fast to see the whole muscle loss thing, and it actually showed that I gained muscle. I fasted 28 out of 31 days in January, and I gained muscle in the arms, gained muscle in the legs, but I lost lean tissue, which was extrapolated as muscle in the trunk area. Well, after talking to Jason about it, he says, well, a lot of times the DEXA will mistake some of the fat loss around organs as lean tissue as muscle, when it's actually fat being removed from around the organ. So little by little, I'm seeing those things get better. I've actually noticed that skin tags have started to shrivel up on this most recent one. And so I still have a lot of them, But the one I had one around my shoulder that was actually killing me, and like right in the middle of the fast, it just dropped off. I'm like, whoa. I never would have guessed that.
I was covered in skin tags when I was a kid and a teenager. They were all over, and they all just went away. Like, it's remarkable.
And so I actually noticed, too, that when I started eating again, this is kind of a cool effect to know that the insulin sensitivity hopefully is coming back. I didn't gain as much weight initially after that first meal. I've eaten before following a longer fast and gained 5 pounds with that first meal. I only gained about 2 pounds with the first meal back this time. And it was a pretty sizable meal. When you fasted that long, you want to eat. So I ate a pretty darn big meal, and yet it didn't impact me. Ketones stayed pretty strong. So I'm noticing, again, building up that fasting muscle. The more that I do this, the better off it becomes, and I'm seeing it. But I think it's going to be a slow process. It took me decades to mess this body up. Let's hope it doesn't take decades to get it back on track again.
I don't think it will.
You've said that before when I've been on your show. You know, when we were talking about ketosis, and I think ketosis is a fabulous hack for people and probably could get them most of the benefits that we're talking about with a fast. But when ketosis and other diets aren't enough, maybe fasting is just the ticket.
The point about insulin resistance is a good one, because that's the part that nobody really looks at. Because again, if you think about insulin as the key driver of obesity, one of the things that keeps insulin very high is insulin resistance. And that's what kills people, right? Because it's not dietary, right? If your insulin level stays up because of your insulin resistance, then you're going to gain weight. Because remember, insulin is telling your body to store energy. That's its normal function. You eat, insulin goes up, you store energy, right? And if you're storing energy, you're not burning it, right? And that's the whole problem. So if you become very insulin resistant, then your insulin levels are up all the time. Your body is always trying to shove the energy into the fat cells, and then you feel cold and tired and lousy, right? And that's the real problem. But resistance really depends on two things. It's not simply the high levels, but it's the persistence of those levels. So what people have realized is that the insulin resistance, because it depends on those two things, a period of time where you can get your insulin levels very low is going to break that resistance, because it breaks that kind of persistence, not simply the levels, but the persistence of those levels, right? So there's this fabulous study where they took people. Over 1 week, they gave them either a daily caloric restriction or kind of a 5-2 diet sort of thing. So 2 days of fasting, 5 days of regular, but the calories were virtually identical, right? And what you found was that the weight loss was fairly similar, but the insulin sensitivity was way better with the intermittent fasting group. So now you're healing the insulin sensitivity problem. And what's happening is that in the long term, that's going to make it a lot easier to lose weight. And we see this all the time, because I deal with mostly people on the very extremes of insulin resistance. So type 2 diabetes, I see people up there all the time, and we start fasting them, and we get them off all their insulin, we get them off all their medications, we get their blood glucoses down, and people are like, wow, the diabetes is all reversed. I'm like, of course it is, because you simply got rid of the insulin resistance, you got rid of the diabetes, like that's it. And it's very powerful, because people treat type 2 diabetes and insulin resistance like it's some foregone conclusion that, oh, you have it, you'll always have it, right? That's not the case. It's a completely reversible disease. And this is one, what I refer to in one of my lectures as the biggest lie of type 2 diabetes, is that people like the American Diabetes Association is trying to convince them that you can't do anything about it, right? But there are things you can do. You can heal it with fasting, with fat fasting, with low carbohydrate diets, but they won't promote these things because, you know, there's probably a lot of reasons why they'd won't.
They're hard to sell. Well, yeah. So HbA1c is a blood test that is commonly used to track type 2 diabetes. And with something like metformin, a common drug for type 2 diabetes, you can improve your results by 1%. Exercise will improve it by about another 1%, so small changes. I have a piece of gear at Bulletproof Labs, like underneath my feet, It takes about 20 seconds a week of exercise, about 2 minutes to do the whole sequence, but only actually 20 seconds of exercise that improves HbA1c by 8.2% on average. Right? And it's by flexing the bones. So what you're doing is you're actually driving changes in bone density, which changes hormones, which causes the body to use glucose more effectively because it increases demand, probably in the bones, certainly in the bone marrow, perhaps. So it's fascinating to me that even changes in the type of exercise, you can get any sort of really heavy weight-bearing exercise is going to do a little bit of that. This is just a machine that causes you to do isometric exercises to the point of bones bending.
Yeah, that's very interesting because, again, it's the same thing with exercise. People and fasting, they always say, well, it's a stress, isn't it? It's like, yeah, fasting is a stress to the body, so is exercise. With bending the bones, of course, you're putting the bones under stress and you're forcing your body to make that bone stronger, right? So astronauts mm-hmm. go up in space and there's no pressure on the bones, so they all get osteoporosis. So we all think that osteoporosis is a matter of lack of calcium. It's nothing of the sort, right?
Exactly.
Because the thing is that I can give people osteoporosis, how you go up into space, or you lie down in bed all day, you become bedbound, right? You get osteoporosis. Everybody knows that. Why? Because you're not stressing your body, right? So this is the concept of hormesis, which Nassim Taleb talks all about. I mean, that guy, I think, is totally brilliant, right? But he talks about hormesis in that small doses of something which can be toxic, for example, in small doses are very, very good for you. So it's the same thing. Exercise is hormesis, fasting is hormesis, flexing the bones is hormesis. So any stress on the body, as long as it's not excessive, is actually very, very good.
Some things are just not hormetic at all, and this is, I think, a big problem with a lot of nutritional research. Like cyanide isn't hormetic, mercury isn't hormetic, right? Hypoxia is hormetic, right? Like a lack of oxygen, which raises brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF. So there's all these crazy things, but there's like a bit of a bro, like kind of, chest thumping perspective, like, little bit of gluten in pizza won't bother me. It's like, well, actually, it turns out if you're having pizza once a week on your cheat day, it probably is bothering you. And I can show you a bunch of studies, but like gluten probably isn't a hormetic stressor for some of us, but others are. And so being able to just know, is this a good stress that's going to make you stronger? Or is this just a stress that takes away and causes food cravings later? A lot of my work in the food roadmap on the Bulletproof Diet has been figuring out what's hormetic. But like nightshade vegetables are not hormetic if you're one of the 20% of people who have essentially a blood type that isn't going to work well with them. This is different than the blood type diet stuff. But so like you don't know, but understanding the benefits of good stress versus just like stress that's kryptonite stress. Do you buy that? I mean, you guys have a different life experience than I do. And Jason, you're a medical professional and I'm just a hack. So,
no, absolutely. Absolutely. And that definitely is true, right? It's like asbestos. Asbestos is not hermetic, right?
There you go.
You don't want asbestos, right? So definitely it's true. But these sort of, there are other things that are hermetic, right? And for those things, you have to realize that those are the hermetic things. And then you should go ahead and do those or do more of those. And we all know that with exercise, right? Yeah, you should exercise. Absolutely, right? You don't build muscle by sleeping, right? And this is one of the things that always gets me all kind of riled up. Everybody talks about muscle loss and so on. I'm always like, okay, if you're talking muscle, you don't eat to gain muscle, okay? You have to exercise to gain muscle, okay? If you want to lose weight, that's mostly about the diet. Yes, you can exercise to lose weight. It's really hard, right? A lot of people have tried to do it, and most have been not successful. But again, it's like everybody says, well, if I don't eat, I'll lose muscle, right? It's like, why? Why would your body do that, right? Yes, you are going to lose some lean mass. Yes, you're going to lose some protein, but that's not all bad, like those skin tags. And this is the thing, something like the...
Jimmy lost 2 pounds of skin tags on his
back. I wouldn't doubt it.
This is the thing, that we have people who have lost 100 pounds, but we never have problems with flabby skin, right? Because that's all protein that needs to go, right? And it's like if you look at Holocaust pictures and Japanese, World War II American prisoners of war, there was no flabby skin, right? Some of these people had a lot more skin when they started. In 1945, when they're released, there was no flabby skin. Why? Because the body's not that stupid to starve and still have flabby skin. You're going to burn that for energy, and it's the same. It's a good thing. You want to lose a little bit of that protein. So just because you've lost a little bit of protein doesn't mean it's a bad thing, right?
Very, very insightful comment. And thank you, Jason. I hadn't thought of that, but it makes really good sense. Do you think that fasting then might help people with loose skin? I hear this a lot with bulletproof people, and I know there's certain kinds of exercise that can help the body just to want to tighten up the skin. And I don't have loose skin issues, even though I've lost 100 pounds. Is fasting going to fix loose skin for most people just because your body gets so hungry it absorbs all the extra skin?
Yeah, because what happens is that there is a period of time. So if you look at the physiology of fast, what happens is that when you fast for about 24 hours, roughly, you have glycogen stores, you burn that all off. Once you burn that off, between glycogen and real ramping up of fat burning, there's a small period in there where you're doing gluconeogenesis and some protein is going to be lost, right? And that's all the connective tissue and all the skin and stuff that needs to go. So if anything is going to do it, it's going to be fasting. So I can't say it's 100% successful, but I can tell you that if it's probably the technique that has the most likelihood of success, so I can't say for sure, but anecdotally, we've had lots of people who said, oh, okay, they had a lot of problems, and then as soon as they started the fasting, and it's not going to go away in like 2 days, right? It's over time, they've noticed that their skin has actually tightened up significantly because your body knows that that is superfluous tissue, right? Again, we can't assume that our body is just that stupid, right? It knows that it's useless tissue, so therefore it goes back in there and says, well, let's get rid of it, let's get rid of it. There's that whole process of autophagy and also programmed cell death, which are fundamental processes in life because and again, it comes to the same thing. Everybody always thinks building up is good, but it's not. It's tearing down and then breaking and then building up. That's good, right? Just building more, that's like painting on top of wallpaper, right? It's like, yeah, it'll work, but it's not good, right? You got to take it off and then put down what you want.
Let's talk about the chicks. What about women? Women respond differently to fasting, to ketosis, than men do, at least quite often. What changes if you're a woman and you want to try fasting?
Actually, there's not a lot of difference, right? And I think this, too, is one of the great myths of fasting, is that women can't do it. And that's kind of ridiculous because women have fasted for thousands of years, right? Again, some infertility. Yeah. I mean, if you think about all the religious fasts, for example, it's like, do women get exempted, right? No, not at all, right? When it's Lent or when it's Yom Kippur or when it's Ramadan, the women fast. Now, there are certain situations. One, if you're pregnant, definitely don't do it. Breastfeeding,
please don't. But just as a book author of a book on fertility, please don't fast when you're pregnant. Like that is just bad in every way.
Bad.
Right.
Okay. And also, if you're underweight, then you probably shouldn't be fasting. Now that's just common sense because what can happen if your body fat falls below a certain point is that you will stop your cycles and you won't be able to get pregnant. Right. So that's for sure. Those are special situations. And again, if you're 16 years old and borderline anorectic in terms of, your personality, then of course that's not for you, right? But that's a whole different thing than the 65-year-old woman who is obese and type 2 diabetes, right? So there is a context to it. But if, when you take out those people who shouldn't be fasting, then women do fine. And all the studies, all the old studies have both men and women, and they lose fat at the same rate. And some people say, well, I fast, I didn't lose as much weight as I thought I would. Well, that happens to men too, right? So we have a clinic, we've seen hundreds and hundreds of people, and at least half of them are women, and probably they do equally well. In fact, some of the people who have done the best are women. So there's no reason, there's no physiologic reason. Remember, the difference between men and women is sex hormones, right? Estrogen, testosterone. Insulin, which is the main thing when you talk about hormonal changes of fasting, is the same in men and women. I mean, not exactly, but it is similar, right? there is a interplay between sex hormones and insulin. And the other thing is cortisol and human growth hormone and so on. Most of those are very similar between men and women. But again, the reason it got out there was because there was some internet post. Somebody said, well, look at these studies of five rats and the women rats didn't do so well. I'm like, well, what about the last 5,000 years of human history when women were fasting? Did we see any problems? No. What about all the religious fasting? Did we see problems with women?
No. I'm sorry, I mean, Jason. Until we double blind the last 5,000 years of history, we cannot pay attention to it. I'm sorry. There you go, skeptics. I got your back.
And the truth is this, right? If you're a woman and you're worried about it, then you should try it. And if it really sucks and it's really bad and you're really not doing well, then don't do it. But it happens to men too, right? There are a lot of men who don't lose the weight that they feel. It's always an option, right? We don't say that everybody has to do it, but try it. Try it, see how you do. Now, if you do it once or twice, you're going to think it really sucks, right? The first few times, the first few weeks that you do it is going to be bad, right? And that's where everybody falls off, because just like Jimmy, he did it once and said, whoa, this was terrible, right? And I'm not never doing this again, right? It's like exercise. You don't like run a marathon the first time you put on some running shoes, right? And then your muscles are all sore and go, oh, that was terrible. I don't know why everybody says exercise so good for you. I felt terrible, right? It's the same thing with fasting. You got to get that muscle up. I mean, it's not actually a muscle, but it's the same idea. The more you do it,
psychological muscle.
Exactly. But the more you do it, the easier it gets. And I think what happens, yeah, and you can actually see this physiologically, is that you upregulate all those genes that are used during fasting. So your body can actually switch the fuel sources much easier. So before, it's kind of rusty, right? So you're used to burning food and you can't burn your fat. But then after a few weeks of fasting, you can just switch over right away and you don't get that problem with the hunger and all that sort of thing.
It's interesting. I've been doing this for a long time now. And I take brain octane oil, which converts directly to ketones, with every meal. I use it in my salad dressing. I pour it on my food. I travel with a little bottle of it. So pretty much my blood ketones every day are 0.5 or higher multiple times throughout the day. Even if I eat carbs or whatever else, it's a constant thing. Every morning I have Bulletproof coffee, which reliably gets me up to actually about 0.7 to 0.8 on a good morning. This is on my blood ketone measures. I think that has trained my biology to easily use ketones or glucose at any time. And it's made it so I can fly to Japan and just like, I don't need to eat, right, at all. I just don't care. And I feel like I have this freedom from hunger and cravings that I never had before. Do you have any data on what happens there when people are just frequently in both a state where they have glucose and they have ketones, but more, much more frequently than you can actually achieve in a normal world where it takes a couple of days of fasting or carb restriction to get any ketones at all?
I don't have any data, but anecdotally, we find exactly what you're talking about. People who are on a ketogenic diet or a low carb diet, I think their bodies are already used to burning fats. So, for example, if you look at muscle tissue, people who are always in ketosis, they actually have upregulated the genes to use fatty acids as energy, right? So therefore, that's why you get this kind of keto adaptation phase, where if you're always burning glucose, your muscles actually can't use that fatty acid very well because they haven't had the gene products to do it. So the same thing is if you go from a very high carb kind of standard American diet and you fast, it really is a shock. But as Jimmy had noted in his previous book, Keto Clarity, intermittent fasting almost comes naturally when you're in a ketogenic diet. Your hunger's not there. You know, your body's just burning fat. So it's no different from burning body fat, right? So it's like, hey, it's all the same stuff. It's all triglycerides. So therefore, I'm just going to burn this body fat same as I would this butter, right? So then it's easy because you don't have that kind of drop in energy. You don't have that drop in thing. And it is freeing, right? This is the whole idea, is that fasting is not something that you do. Fasting is something that you don't do, right? And in that way, it's completely different from every other diet. Every other diet tries to add complexity, you know, mm-hmm. do this, do this, do this. Fasting kind of simplifies it. There's no shopping, there's no cooking, there's no cleaning, there's no planning. you're saving money, right? You can use it if you want and not if you want, right?
One of the cool things about fasting is that you are, by definition, doing less of the things that make you weak. Like, there are things in your diet that aren't as good for you as you think they are, or things that you just don't know about, even if there are small things that make you weak. So there's really good food, and then you did something to it, and it wasn't as good as it could have been. All that stuff goes away. So if there are these, like, pros and cons, you got rid of all the cons that came
through,
by definition, right?
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes that can be part of just the wow, I felt so good, like my joints stopped hurting, and like the really cool stuff that happens. But I have a question. My wife, Karenska, trained physician, when she was 16, she read a book about some sort of spiritual thing and did a 10-day water fast. And she was not anorexic. She wasn't fat. She wasn't trying to lose weight. She just wanted the mental clarity and thought it seemed like a good idea at the time, as teenagers are likely to do. They just do stuff. She, for 20 years after that, was rail thin and cold. Like, her thyroid stopped functioning when she on that fast. We're talking like no padding on the butt, kind of cold. And when I first met her, she was still like that. I'm like, oh, we can fix that. And we did. And she's at a healthy and a normal weight. But have you seen, especially in teenagers, any kind of thyroid effects, down regulation, other things like that? A 10-day water fast for a teenager seems extreme, but what are the risks, and who should maybe do that, or what should she have done differently?
Well, I think that it all depends on where you are to start with, right? So if you are normal weight or relatively underweight,
she was normal, yeah.
There's a bit of risk with that, right? And it's the same thing. It's like running that marathon the first time you do it. You could do some serious damage, right? So this is the thing
first guy
is that
died,
you have
right?
to. Yeah, that's right. What is his name? Some that Greek guy. But that's the thing is that you have to kind of take things slowly. You have to have the knowledge to go with, right? Obviously, she was just kind of impressionable at the time and thought, hey, this is super cool, right? But it's like her body's completely not adapted to it. She's not able to use the fats very well and all that sort of thing. I mean, I don't know that there is any effect on the thyroid. None of the studies have really shown a huge effect. And I get this question all the time about thyroid function, but it really doesn't affect it much. Now, there is a problem if you start to go kind of too low. So if your cholesterols go too low and so on, because you know, a lot of these hormones are actually fat-based, right? So if you go too low and you become too underweight, yeah, there all kinds of bad things can happen, right? So that's why our general rule is if your BMI is less than 20, we say don't do it. There's no point. Or just do very short ones, right? Like 24 hours, 36 hours, right? There's no problem with that. Because again, if you look at what we have people do when they do fasting blood work, when we have them do for colonoscopies, what we have them do, it's often fasting for 24 hours. If you go into surgery, they'll often tell you not to eat for 24 hours, right? So you're fasting, right? Nobody ever has a problem with that, right? So these shorter ones are okay. Right? 16 hours, 18 hours, 24 hours. But 10 days, it's a little bit extreme to go the first time you go out, for sure.
Awesome. Now, we're coming up on the end of the interview. And Jimmy, I've asked you the question already that comes with Bulletproof Radio. But Jason, we haven't had a chance to do this. So I'm going to ask you the question. If someone came to you tomorrow and they said, look, based on everything you know from your career, but also just from life in general, and I wanted to perform better at everything I do, so I want to kick ass at life, what are the three most important things I need to know? What would you recommend?
I mean, that is difficult, right? I mean, this is not just diet related.
It can be anything at all, right? You might talk about diet not at all, or you might say it matters a lot. It's up to you.
You know, I think that the one of the real things is, And I think Johnny Bowden had talked about this a little bit, was that obesity is not simply about calories. It's really about hormones. And there are things in life that are very, very important that everybody kind of poo-poos in the kind of Western world. So there are things such as friendship and a sense of community and belonging that are simply so important, but because you can't measure it as a caloric value, people tend to kind of denigrate it as in yeah, whatever, right? So things that are really important are that friends, family, sense of community. There's the spiritual aspect, which is not necessarily religious, but spiritual or meditation or, you know, again, one of these things, and we talk about it sometimes, meditation, as a way of stress management, right? And again, everybody's like, oh, that's all like airy-fairy and all this stuff. But again, there's so much data that says that you can actually reduce those harmful kind of cortisol levels and so on. So meditation and religion, I think, is so far ahead of us in terms of what they told people, which is like, think about what they do. Come to church every week, right? Sense of community. Everybody's doing the same thing at the same time. When you're fasting with the whole community, right? Sense of community. You're doing prayer, which is a form of meditation, right? And fasting, right? So they've kind of codified this way of being well and kicking ass in life, right? Mm-hmm. And they've told us, and not just one religion, right? It's not simply Christianity, right? But every single religion has the same thing, community, prayer or / meditation, way of dealing with stress and fasting, right? Those three things are the key. And we're so blind to this kind of reality that we that what you need is money, right? It's like, yeah, you don't get it, right? Happiness is not about money, right? It's about that. Right. And the key to a happy life, obviously, is to stay healthy. Right. Nobody's going to be happy if they've got all kinds of health issues. And those really are the most important things, of which diet is only one. Right. So those three things,
thank you,
again, are probably the most. Right. So community, kind of support, meditation, spirituality, and fasting. I mean, those, I think, are the pillars.
A beautiful answer. Thank you. And Jimmy, I have a bonus question for you.
Uh-oh. By the way, I'm on your vibration plate right now.
I was just going to say, I hear a familiar sound in the background, so you're doing the bulletproof vibe.
I am, dude. I'm the only one of the three of us that's standing up. So I've stood up for over an hour, so I needed to do a little shaking.
Nice. I have one right behind my standing desk, but I'm not at my standing desk.
It makes your voice sound really funny.
It does. And by the way, this was not a planned plug, but thank you.
I love it. I use it every day.
I do too. It does something special. Like, I think it's a mitochondrial thing. Like when you agitate a vat full of bacteria, they get healthier. Like it creates like hormetic stress in your organelles. By the way, I have no scientific evidence for
all
that.
I know, but my low back pain goes away when I do this.
So. And we do know there's some mitochondrial density studies from astronauts and whatever, but there's something cool happening there. It may be piezoelectric, but whatever it is, I support you doing it, and I do it
myself. I bet you've never had a guest do it while you're interviewing them, so this is fun.
It's totally true. I have not. And that actually goes into my question for you, because you've done, you said 1,200 interviews, and you actually are a gentleman. Like you always act with kindness. You've interviewed some people who most of us would say are total assholes.
And not Jason. And it wasn't Jason.
it wasn't Jason. But you've really like just kind of held your ground and been polite and been focused on the science. You are the exception. Both of you are. When you look at the keto community and you look at the amount of trolling, just the amount of just anger and rage that's out there about keto and fasting, where do you think it comes from? Because you don't have it.
Oh, and that's ironic. It ended just as you finished your question. So no more shaky voice. You know, Dave, there are good people in the world that do the right thing regardless. And then there are people in the world who have agendas and they try to push that agenda for whatever their purpose. I wish I understood. I just know I've done this long enough to know if you're doing good, there will be people who will want to undo your good. And so it just motivates me. And I know Jason has the same philosophy, just to keep doing what I'm doing. because you can't really control what others think about you and what they say about you. And if you've been online for very long and you've had any level of success online, and I know you've seen this too, Dave, you're going to get trolled. You're going to get vilified. Yeah. And people are going to say every ugly name under the sun to you. At the end of the day, screw them. Because I have too many people I'm trying to save out there with my work. And if I get bogged down answering all the trolls, I have no time to do the good work. So what their motivation is, I don't have a clue, but really I don't give a crap either.
well said. I'm trying to remember who it was. It might've been Brendan Burchard. Cause I, a couple of years ago, I had just one guy sent like 20,000 trolls to my page all at once. Yeah. Like, good God, it's like wading through slime. And there's some people who are really mad about specifically keto diets and around high fat diets and fasting. And it's almost like there's like an MMA fight where they're online just beating each other senseless. I have a study. Well, my study's got better edges than yours.
And we like, got studies. Yes, we do. We got studies. How about you?
and I'm like, what happened when you tried it? And they're like, what? I wouldn't try that. There's no double blind study. It's a scam. Yeah. And you're like, so I haven't decoded that human behavior, because if I could, there's probably a lot of people in those communities who probably could really be helped a lot. And if they were neurologically able to act with kindness and awareness, they would probably spread a lot less crap around. In the meantime, there's always ban delete, which works really well on Facebook.
Yeah. I use that a lot.
It takes me no time at all. They spend like 20 minutes trying to troll, and you're like, boop, and they're gone.
But you know what's cool about fasting, Dave? Fasting fits into every dietary paradigm. There's not one single dietary paradigm that can't implement some form of fasting. So that's why I kind of like this.
I have a new book called The Frosting Fast coming out, and all you do is canned frosting. It's so good. Oh, my God.
Oh, be still my insulin heart. Yes.
On that lovely note, I suppose that question, number one, I am really curious about that, but that question is also a compliment, Jimmy, because you've maintained your good nature through 1,200 podcast episodes, which is remarkable and not true throughout a lot of the paleo and keto community. Like, I've never seen you really lose your cool like that. So hats off for being a good human being. I appreciate that.
Thank you, sir.
And Jason, thank you for taking your medical knowledge and your medical license even, and you know, going out there and pushing the limits, because it's always harder when you have a license that they can threaten to break paradigms and be disruptive, which is why I'm grateful to be an unlicensed biohacker, because you can't take away my unlicensed. And I'm actually, I just found out yesterday, I've known for a while, I'm speaking at the American Academy of Anti-Aging Medicine on the main stage keynote, but I'm the only non-physician to do it this year, which completely blows me away. And it's such an amazing honor to be able to go in and talk with doctors and to be able to learn from them and to be able to, you know, ask you questions and to be able to have an intelligent conversation. So it's cool that there are people now who are going to medical conferences who aren't necessarily doctors, who care that much. And I think that when you write a book with Jimmy like this, where you guys collaborate on this, it takes something that would have been stuck in academia for 30 years or in a medical research lab and gets it out there where it can help people who would be dead in 30 years. And so like that's the ultimate medicine that you're really practicing there. So thanks for putting yourself out there to do that. That's cool.
Thank you very much. I mean that is the point, because we can help people like right now. Right? Yeah. You're absolutely right. They're like, oh, why don't you do a research study? I'm like, okay, then what? Right? I'm going to do a study. 5 years later, people are going to say, oh, that wasn't randomized, double blind. Oh, you only had a few hundred people. You didn't have 10,000. I'm like, people nitpick these stuffs to death, right? Even the Women's Health Initiative, like 50,000 people. Oh, this is the problem. Like, what are you talking about? This is like the best study ever, right? And everybody just ignores you, right? But here we can help people kind of like right now. And I'm not saying everybody has to do it, right? I'm saying try it. Give it a try. Here's the information. And if you're helped, keep doing it, right? And that's all we're saying, right? So it's we're not trying to push anybody into it, but we're saying look at it as something that is doable, right? That's what we're trying to do with this.
I would support that message 100%. And for listeners, this book by Jimmy Moore and Jason Fung is called The Complete Guide to Intermittent Fasting. You can pick it up on Amazon. And you guys are in print as well, or are you just on Amazon?
Oh, yeah, like, it's in print.
Barnes & Noble?
Yeah, it's in print and Barnes & Noble, okay. Books A Million. And coming in December, I actually just finished the audiobook. Since I'm a podcaster that people know my voice, I went ahead and read the whole book. So that's coming in early December.
That's actually a huge amount of work. It takes like 4 days.
Yeah, no kidding, dude. More than 4 days.
For the Bulletproof Diet, I read the first two or three chapters in a special booth, and it took a whole day. But I couldn't get three more days of booth time because I kept having like keynote presentations and flying around. So I had a professional reader. I always felt bad because I wanted to read the whole thing, but I couldn't do it.
It's so much harder than, say, a podcast, because a podcast, I can sit here and jibber-jabber with you. But when you're reading the words, you just mess up. And so, yeah, my poor podcast producer is going through that now and, all right, dude, you mispronounced this word, you know, reread that. And so it's just the magic behind the scenes of doing an audiobook. And I wasn't going to do that to Jason. That's it. That is a lot of work.
Well,
and
guys,
he threw in some words in there. I was like, I don't know what this word is. So can you like.
All right. I got to ask. And then we're gonna wind up. Autophagy.
Autophagy is what I say.
I know.
I
that's what you guys say. But are you sure?
But I've heard autophagy before.
Right, like I've heard it both ways. I don't know which one is technically correct.
I mean, we'll go with how does the Nobel Prize winner say it, Jason?
Yeah.
Well, he was Japanese. So.
So say it in Japanese. No.
So I guess we don't have a consensus on that. I mean, in med school, what did they say?
I think when I heard it, not many people talked about it, but it was autophagy. But again, autophagy. It's probably one of these things that can go either way.
Like process and process.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got it. Beautiful. On that crazy trivial note about one of the side effects of fasting, we'll end today's show of Bulletproof Radio. Guys, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for the work you're doing. For people listening, you know what to do. This is a book that's worth reading. You've probably tried a Bulletproof Intermittent Fast. It happens when you have Bulletproof coffee for breakfast and nothing else. It's pretty easy, and you know how painless it is. Try a longer fast, and I would recommend for the first 2 days, use your Bulletproof coffee because, well, I'm lazy and it works for me. But if you do just a plain old water fast and you just go through the first 2 days of high ghrelin levels, it's okay too. All right, it builds character, if nothing else, to just resist some urges for a little while. And this should be a part of at least your annual just self-maintenance task. You take your car in every year to get the belts tightened and whatever the heck else you do with modern cars, get the batteries watered. I have no idea. Cars keep changing. But the bottom line is you should be doing the same thing for yourself, and fasting for at least a few days every year belongs there, and maybe more often than that. Jimmy and Jason have done the world a favor by writing a book about it that really focuses in on it. So if you care about the stuff that you've heard about on the last 350 episodes of Bulletproof Radio, this is right in the middle of biohacking, and it's something that's worth your time and energy to read. So head on over to Amazon, pick up the book, which is called The Complete Guide to Intermittent Fasting by Fung and Moore. All right, guys, thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you, and don't miss our new podcast coming out in January, Fasting Talk.
I forgot to mention that. Fasting Talk.
Fasting
All
Talk.
All right. That is a final thing in January, Fasting Talk. And I'm guessing, this is my psychic abilities here, 40 years of Zen training kicks in. You're going to talk about fasting.
You guessed it. We're actually going to answer listener questions. If people are familiar with my show on Thursdays called Keto Talk with Jimmy Moore and the Doc, it's going to be the same kind of format, except we're going to add in some patients of Dr. Fung's, along with Megan Ramos, his sidekick in crime with the fasting.
Nice.
They're going to alternate basically every other week, Dr. Fung and Megan, along with patients, so that we can answer questions from the real world perspective, because you asked some pretty real world questions today, and we'll answer those with expert knowledge.
All right. That's called Fasting Talk. Comes out in January. That's going to be a cool show. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.